Gas from the maneuvering jets coaxed little twisters of dust from the network of fine fissures lacing the rumpled polyp surface. He started at a corner, switching the sensors to cover an area of half a square meter, then fired the jets to carry him sideways. His neural mnemonics monitored the inertial guidance module in a peripheral mode, allowing him to give his full attention to the ancient polyp as the search navigation program carried him backwards and forwards across the floor, each sweep overlapping the last by 5 centimeters. He had to keep reminding himself of scale, otherwise he might have been flying an atmosphere craft over a desert of leaden sand. Deep, dry valleys were actually impact scratches, sludgy oases, marked where mud particles had hit, kinetic energy melting them only to refreeze immediately. A circular hole 1 centimeter in diameter expanded to fill half his vision. Metal glinted within, a spiral ramp leading down, bolt hole. He found another one. This time the bolt was still inside, sheared off. 2 more, both with snapped bolts. Then he found it, a hole 4 centimeters across. Frayed cable ends inside waved at him like seaweed fronds. The optical fibers were unmistakable, different tolerances to the Kulu Corporation standard he was used to, but apart from that they could have been human-made. A buried communication net which must logically be linked with a central data storage system. But where? Joshua smiled around the respirator tube. The entrance hall gave access to every other part of the building, why not the maintenance ducts? It fell into place without even having to think. So obvious, destiny, or something close. Laughter and excitement were vibrating his nerves. This was it, the big strike. His ticket out into the real universe. Back in tranquility, in the clubs and scavenger pubs, they would talk in envious, respectful tones about Joshua and his strike for decades. He'd made it. The datavised order he'd shot into the maneuvering pack sent him backing away from the office's floor. His suit sensors clicked down the magnification scale, jumping his vision field back to normal in a lurching sequence of snapshots. The pack rotated him 90 degrees, pointing him at the mosaic, and he raced towards it, pale white ribbons of gas gushing from the jet nozzles. That was when he saw it. An infrared blob swelling out of the ruin ring. Impossible, but there it was. Another scavenger. And there was no way it could be a coincidence. His initial surprise was replaced by a burst of dangerous anger. They must have tracked him here. It wouldn't have been particularly difficult, now he thought about it. All you needed was an orbit 20 kilometers above the ring plane, where you could watch for the infrared signature of reaction drives as scavenger craft matched orbits with their chosen shell sections. You would need military-grade sensors, though, to see through all the gunk in the ring, which implied some pretty cold-blooded planning on someone's part, someone determined in a way Joshua had never been. Someone who wouldn't shrink from eliminating the scavenger whose craft they intercepted. The anger was beginning to give way to something colder. Just how many scavengers had failed to return in the last few years? He focused the collar sensors on the still-growing craft and upped the magnification. Pink smear enveloped by brighter pink mist of the reaction drive exhaust. But there was a rough outline. The standard 20-meter-long hexagonal grid of an interorbit cargo tug with a spherical life support nodule on one end, tanks and power cells filling the rear cargo cradles, nesting round the reaction drive. No 2 scavenger craft were the same. They were put together from whatever was available at the time, whatever components were cheapest. It helped with the identification. Everyone knew their friend's ships, and Joshua recognized this one. The Madeir, owned by Sam Neves and Octor Sipica. Both of them were a lot older than him. They'd been scavengers for decades, one of the few 2-man teams working the ruin ring. Sam Neves, a ruddy-faced, jovial man, 65 years old now, with fluid retention adding considerable bulk to his torso due to the time he spent in freefall. His body wasn't engineered for long-term zero-G exposure like Joshua's. He had to go in for a lot of internal nanonic supplements to compensate for the creeping atrophy. Joshua could remember pleasant evenings spent with Sam back around the time he started out scavenging, eagerly listening to the older man's tips and tall stories.